Bones Holiday Spectacular.
Let's go.
George posted two blog posts this month. The first one got a lot of attention. Why did he get a lot of attention? Because he said some things about House of the Dragon that probably HBO wouldn't have wanted him to say.
A lot of things about House of the Dragon.
He pulled an egg in that situation. He's like, oh, I couldn't hear you. I didn't hear you say I forgot about all those emails back in the early 20-teens. Another blog post about doorways.
I hadn't seen it before. You hadn't seen it before. It was a great watch. If you have time over the holiday vibe season, 100% recommend watching it. I thought the story about how doorways came to be and then eventually how that fit into A Song of Ice and Fire and A Game of Thrones being written and how that came to be. And just a little glimpse into the mechanics of the creative process. Such an interesting read. It was such a great post. I mean, okay, whatever. I'm always going to love every single post that George writes, but I just felt like the personal struggle and then triumph of this project that he was really interested in, that he came up with on the flight over to LA, which is bold, turned into something he was really proud of, didn't work out. And then from that, he had the time and opportunity to go
and
back
the feeling,
to
this necessary feeling mm-hmm. after being burned.
Which he'd been, he said, like 100 pages in at that point to writing A Game of Thrones. And then from that birthed his next or his great thing that he will, as he says in the post, likely be known for. And so it was such a great story about the, I don't really know what the right phrase is, but the writing process. And he talks about this all the time, but like the rejection and the need to be creative and, you know, the inner workings of television and book writing, da 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 da.
It seems like there's something mystical attached to that, like the comfort that came from making, being a co-showrunner on a show at the scale of Doorways at that time in media. And like you said, we watched it. To me, it gave off this cinematic vibe, something like a Twin Peaks that was dealing with science fiction, but mixing in the splashiness of science fiction with the darkness of someone who's trying to make a point while they have the opportunity to create teleplays for money. And the point being just like, this is what a better version of it is. I've gone through the trenches. I know how to write enough to get accepted to move on to the next step in my career. Maybe a lot of folks making television at that time more leaned on people in scantily clad clothing. But without like talking about the whole television show, I do think that that transition from being in that comfort zone of maybe this will work out, maybe this will be what I do. I think a lot of us, maybe all of us, have had those opportunities in our life that pop up. That awesome sleeping arrangement he has in the tower and that wash basin that's so nearby, and then Egg brings up Faircastle. Sometimes I guess it takes getting burned. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not all of us need to be burned, mm-hmm. but something causing a reaction tends to lead to something cool. It's just nice that it worked out in this way.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
It seems like the show was pretty high budget, we were saying.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that that's silly to say, but it was actually good. I mean, it was picked up and he talks about how he was paid a pretty penny for the first six episodes or something. It was just down to executives changing of the guard and deciding that, hey, we don't want to go in this direction because we don't like the other guy, basically, which is such a shame. But I guess that's just what you deal
with. Imagine being so twisted up in that potential success and something gets pulled out from under you like that.
I know.
Because of some other person's career move and then just a preference, not even the quality of the thing itself.
But imagine, as he says in his post, like if that had been successful and multiple seasons had come from it, A Song of Ice and Fire, the vibe I got would not be what it is today if things had worked out a little bit differently. So that's a pretty neat insight to have.
Yeah. It's cool to hear an author that is successful say that one of the reasons why I put so much work into this thing is because I can control which actors go where. I can cast the people in my head.
It's too big for
in
TV.
The role. Exactly. It's it's kind of funny that it ended up not being too big for TV. I felt like, honestly, Doorways looked like it was too big for TV at the time, for sure. I was like, Jesus Christ, how many sets do they have? Those outdoor sets when the horses were pulling the Airstream trailer? Mm-hmm. Like, what? Because mm-hmm. you want to be successful. You want to be successful in this world, and you want to do something that involves you in the areas of life that you're interested in being involved in. And I think that it's clear that GRM liked show business and wanted to be involved in it. And that was a pretty good way to get involved in it. It was a pretty nice role within that world. But at the end of the day, the thing that you're making, the thing that actually has value to whatever it is that you do, having the ability to only rely on yourself and to not have any of that taken away when basically you just have to work with an editor and a publisher. Pretty interesting mm-hmm. how it all has worked out. Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder, like, is this world random? Doesn't seem like it is.
It makes me think about how we probably would have found it anyway. Maybe this would have been a Doorways podcast, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What annoys me about Doorways not getting the light that it deserves so much is that style of television show was what I grew up on in the 90s.
Right.
And I was watching things like Xena and Hercules, and they're not as good. They're way more shallow. And so if something like this would have been around, it would have been something that I would have head first dove into.
Completely. Completely.
It's a shame.
Well, it's available now on Amazon Prime or whatever it is. Is that what it is?
I can't wait to collect our check after this one. Yeah. And we were just queuing up to talk about his post about his London trip, which had a lot of House of the Dragon news mm-hmm. written inside of it. And then he followed it up a handful of days later with this, which ended up being... If you're looking for insights, I think that's where you would go to get direct insights. Maybe if he's been on a podcast before, or if he's writing something personal on his blog. This wasn't something that was advertising anything.
Right.
It was an advertise. It was this was a real story hidden within what seemed to be like, hey, go watch my show. But mm-hmm. this is revealing layers of the perspective that's pinning the books that we like, people.
Mm-hmm. The origin story.
Hot D though.
Hot D. Okay.
4 seasons, like we guessed.
Yes.
Not concrete, but it seems pretty concrete.
Mm-hmm. 2 long days, not enough time for them to even talk about what those next 4 seasons would look like, or the next 4 seasons, the overall 4 seasons, so the next 2.
Mm-hmm.
He saw the first 2 episodes of season 2, described them as dark and emotional and some other things, but he kept harping on the fact that it was very dark.
Of course, I'm hardly objective when talking about anything based on my own work, but I have to say, I thought both episodes were just great, and they are not even finished yet. Dark, mind you. Very dark. They may make you cry. I did not cry myself, but one of my friends did. Powerful, emotional, gut-wrenching, heart-rending, just the sort of things I like. What can I say? I was weaned on Shakespeare and loved the tragedies and history plays best of all.
I didn't cry, but, you know, my friend here did. Thought that was cute. The most exciting Hot D news, though, to me, was his description of what the sets looked
like.
Yeah, it's
pretty magical.
He's talking about all these other sets he's been to, including Game of Thrones. Jinx. And this one is as grand, as large, as feeling of him walking directly into Westeros as he's ever seen or felt. That is incredible. And so to me, super excited we're likely getting 4 seasons. Super excited that the first 2 episodes are coming together really well for season 2.
Mm-hmm.
But to have him be able to walk onto the set of his story and to feel the grandeur of it from a pretty unbiased vibe, at least the way he was describing it. And he was like, yeah, you know,
I've been seeing this stuff for decades.
Yeah. So exciting to me because, and we've talked about this on the show a lot, but you think about all the issues we had with set design at the end of Game of Thrones, how they pretty much phoned all of those scenes in, and they had one set.
You're talking about the Red Keep?
Yeah, at the Red Keep.
It was the Red Keep.
Yeah, I mean, around
the Crumbling
King's
Wall
Landing.
Town Square set.
We've come a long way. So it's just, as we march into season 2, we've got the first trailer behind us. We have an understanding of kind of what the season is going to scope. And then to have the seal of approval to say, these sets are grand, they're incredible, never seen anything like it. That's so cool. Because last season already was huge, the scale was massive. So if we're going to one-up that, let's go.
Yeah, I like when they make those areas practical. instead of it being a CGI effect, like they'll have like a CGI set, they'd have a big blue or green screen with a bunch of the hardware, like the furniture and stuff sticking out of the walls, things that'll catch light, that'll help give some separation from the then digital background that you put in. Like I saw someone post online a picture of what looked like a selfie outside of an airplane window, but then they backed up the camera shot and it was a girl standing on a hillside leaning against a toilet seat.
Oh. Right.
Which, I mean, it's really useful, but yeah, when you're talking about some of the epicness around the end of GOT, a lot of it was on those screens. I mean, a lot of it was Dragonflight, so you got to give it to that.
True, for sure.
But building one really big set and shooting the shit out of it isn't the same as like the first handful of seasons of GOT, which were a lot of rooms, be it rooms inside of Titanic Studios. Still, they built those rooms, mm-hmm, and it was real mm-hmm. stuff. And watching the actors move around in those spaces and getting interesting shots in those spaces is part of what made the TV/cinema magic blend together for GOT, which mm-hmm. is why a lot of people loved watching it.
Exactly.
And like you said, still doing that.
To see the actors move around, I mean, it's got to be a million times easier to submerge yourself into the world when you're also, as the actor, standing in the same place that George did and going, whoa. Mm-hmm. So between all of this news, between the trailer, between the vague summer 2024 or spring 2024, which one is it?
Summer.
Summer. Okay. I was like, maybe a little earlier.
2024 is going to be the year of Hot D. Maybe the year of something else. We'll see.
Potentially the year of the Iron Throne, the London play.
Oh, that too, yeah.
He said potentially opening late 2024.
What do you think about it being changed from Harrenhal to the Iron Throne?
Well, he said something that I found interesting. He was like, that's the title until I can think of something better. So that's all I have to say about that. I thought that was interesting.
I was hearing a really cool musical number in my head. People being like, Harrenhal, Harrenhal, but I guess maybe not.
Well, I think like Harrenhal, the title for that is something that's going to really appeal to
the insideries.
Us.
Yeah.
I'm going to just like get off to Harrenhal, you know? Mm. Like it's just, whoa. The Iron Throne is going to appeal to a much wider audience. Sure. And so if we're talking from
better
a marketing
signs
perspective.
Better signs in Times Square, too.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So do you think they're going to use the Game of Thrones theme song at the beginning of the play?
At least when you're filing into your seats, at the very least.
You got it. Let's just keep it going.
I'm
going to
get a $14 mug mm-hmm. if that song is on for sure. Sure. That'll be part of the strategy. Microtransactions.
Oh my gosh. So we're going to go, right?
Oh, for sure.
I can't wait to do. We need to like do a little meetup before we go so we can all do it together.
For sure.
Super exciting, though. The play is going to be really interesting. I know that Harry Potter is our main reference for everything, but think about that experience of the Harry Potter play versus what this experience could potentially be like. Cursed Child was interesting for a various number of reasons. And so
he's still working with British writers.
I know, but when he was talking about he was talking about seeing somebody else's show. And he was like worried because the book that he had read was mostly internal dialogue. So how are we going to turn this onto the stage? It seems to me like he is much more keyed in and
he's part of the process.
He's a storyteller that has used multiple mediums before. J.K. Rowling is somebody who struggled to write for the movies, you know? So I'm really excited to see. I mean, live theater is such a cool experience. And so having the opportunity to see that, I think, is going to be pretty spectacular.
The platforms that George has had to improve off of have made less money than J.K. Rowling's spectacular failures.
Right.
So I think he's probably learned a little bit more off of those too. So he's coming in with that knowledge as well.
A little more to prove.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but I'm very, very excited about that. So, I mean, all of that was pretty much in one post.
Yeah.
So a ton of news, some great picks. I loved the pick of him and Ryan under the Weirwood tree. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So good.
I'm hoping that there's a cameo in season two.
You think so?
Just a little tease about Winds of Winter. Met with his British publishers.
Right.
How many of them are you going to print ahead of time? They're going to sell like hotcakes.
Uh-huh. Thanks for that.
Might not be ready for this. Might want to put the Holy Bible on pause, y'all.
King James version?
Put it on pause.
Exciting.
Yeah.
An exciting time for news. 2024 is going to be massive.
Y'all thought this was a dead series. You said it wouldn't happen.
After Game of Thrones ended, everybody kept saying, what are you guys going to do? What are you going to do? From day one, from page one, from moment one, we were like, Bennis, you know?
Benice.
We didn't know a lot about him, but we knew we didn't like him. Benice came out hot and heavy from moment one. When we met him, I feel like I knew everything about him. And you can't help but be excited and intrigued about a character whose vibe is like oozing off the pages. His name is Benice. Just the way he greeted us, and by us, I mean Dunkin' Egg, which is us.
It's us, yeah.
You could just tell who he was. Okay, skip to part 6 of Sworn Sword. All of these problems will just go away if Benice himself would turn himself over. If somebody would just get rid of Benice. How important is he to Sir Eustace that he won't just like get rid of him? And even at some point near the end, during the little chatsy that Dunk has with Lady Webber, which I can't wait to talk to you about, she's like, I'm not even going to kill him. Like, can someone just like send him over here so he can get this thing over with? Can't do that. We got to protect Benice. And it's like, what? This guy? Nobody likes this guy. Dunk doesn't like the guy. There's no way Sir Eustace doesn't like the guy. Just the way he's training all those men. Nobody likes him, you know? No one's going to go to war for this guy. But they're going to start a war on his behalf. So, anyway.
I think you got to the heart of it right there. That's the whole thing that's happening here. It's not that we want to, like, save Benice. It's that...
Hashtag save Benice.
Benice is my man. He works for me. You can't just have him.
It's so funny that, like...
Why can't I have him? Well, because there are rules, and you can't just have him. It's these rules.
These checky lines.
I didn't give
water.
You leave. He yells. Eustace yells at the men running back to their pot piss holes.
Oh, my gosh.
He goes, I didn't give you leave. They were going to get ran through. And he says, I didn't give you leave. And what authority in what world could some guy who can barely put his clothes on in the morning tell you, no, you have to come die for no reason? Because we know that it's no reason, because you guys aren't even real soldiers, for one. And for two, there are real soldiers coming at you, and there's more of them. So this is for no reason. But I didn't give you leave. So just let me have Benice. No, I'm not going to give him leave to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a lot of posturing over somebody you
pissing
don't
contest,
even care
like
about.
They say.
Exactly like yeah. they talk about. It was just very funny. So in all caps at the top of my notes was just give them Benice. The problem is solved. He sucks. But that's politics, baby. We don't even care about him that much, but we're going to die for him. So let's go. Dunk himself is going to basically die for him. I mean, he doesn't die. But he takes Benice's sins upon himself.
The fire burned all through the night. No one in Standfast slept tonight. Before long, they could smell the smoke and see flames dancing in the distance like girls in scarlet skirts. They all wondered if the fire would engulf them. Dunk stood behind the parapets, his eyes burning, watching for riders in the night. Benice, he said when the brown knight came up, chewing on his sour leaf. It's you she wants. Might be you should go. What, run? He brayed. On my horse? Might as well try to fly off on one of these damn chickens.
Then give yourself up. She'll only slit your nose. I like my nose how it is, Lunk. Let her try and take me. We'll see how... We'll see what gets slit open.
That I tried to decode. I think you could go many ways with
yeah,
it.
I know. That's why I stumbled over it. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, what am I saying? See, that's the thing.
Benice refuses. They're talking strategy. Egg is like... Is everything good?
Yeah, he looks up and he goes, we can't let him do that.
Yeah, like, is everything okay? What's going on? They're only making noise, Egg.
Yeah, because they're so scared and they don't know what else to do. That's such a good observation by Dunk there.
It is. I mean, but he's seen a lot. We get some more of this a little bit later in the chapter, but he's talking about some more things that he's learned from Sir Arlen. You forget the things that he's seen or known because sometimes he just feels like a little bit of a lunk, you know? But the beginning of this paragraph, whatever. All this drama is happening around them. But Dunk and Egg are like, well, we're going to get out of here. It's time to leave. They're going to talk strategy. Benice isn't going anywhere. The fire is still burning and we're just going to peace out of here and go to our own thing. We're going to Fair Isle.
How nice was it when Egg brought that up and described it and it was written in the holy text that Dunk felt a massive weight come off of
yes,
his shoulders.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think it's powerful because it really, in the midst of all this, wisdom that he's gushing, he still would be really relieved to have another plan.
Completely.
Because that's part of the darkness. It's not mm-hmm. just like how hard this current plan is, but having no plan is also pretty dark for a Hedge Knight. And then the second thing is that, and we've known this, but it's good to have it relayed to us back in thoughts inside of his head, that he sees Dunk as an equal, maybe even more of an intellectual superior at some times, and really takes what he says seriously.
They're a team, like yeah. a true team.
Yeah.
And we got to see that in real time here. So there was a brief, exciting moment when I was thinking, what a relief. We're going to get out of here. And we watched Bennis marching everybody around and Dunk.
They're practicing again? Like, you get them tired before? Do you guys have more than boiled eggs to feed them?
Sure.
Although a really good square meal, if that's all you have, has all the stuff you need.
True. I wonder if they were pickled. Probably. Mm. Either way, Dunk sees this. He sees Bennis marching the boys around and he just can't help himself. He knows that this is a lost cause. He knows that there's no world in which any of their egos are going to play out well with their eight men and their burned woods, their dried up fields. They have nothing to stand on. Their family line is dead. No disrespect, but they have nothing to stand on. So how are they going to go up against this woman who, you know,
has real soldiers,
is still small potatoes, but they've got real soldiers, they've got water, and their fields aren't burned, you know, or their woods aren't burned. So little idealistic Dunk, of course he would. He sends all the boys home. He's like, you guys have to go. And I just felt like Eustace. Something, I have like multiple owns, so this is like a preview for that. Eustace's mustache just like quivers and twitches yeah. so many times in this chapter. Uh-huh. And so I can just picture him
it's
up
a face
there.
With no eyes, just uh-huh. mustache in my brain uh-huh. half the time.
Yep. Just like little, the corners like twitching a little bit. Dunk is over here taking control after he already like basically humiliated Eustace. Like this whole thing has been unraveling, yet they're still trying to be the ones.
Because their ideas are so bad, it's obvious, so they don't have that commanding presence anymore
right.
to Dunk. He kind of has the run of the place.
He does, just because he is the only one who's been trying to be actually real and straightforward. It's so funny, it makes sense, how quickly that then changes the dynamic. But he's up there just pissed because people are actually listening to Dunk, and they're like, yeah, we're going to leave and get out of here.
This was the vibe of all the fellas as they were standing there before he sent them off. You guys remember in part four, part three-ish, where the men of the accompanying villages were excited to be a part of this. They were all together. They were away from their families. They were away from their chores. They were playing with sticks. They were letting horses ride at them and jumping out of the way, like that was fun. But today, after the fire, the melons, beans, and barley coins were listening to all they said. All their brave talk had blown away, though there was no breath of wind. They stood clutching their sharpened sticks, looking at Duncan, Bennis, and each other. Is anyone going to step up and lead this thing?
Right. As it becomes
more
real.
What are we doing here? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about, you've read this before, what do you think about Dunk? When he's like, I'll stay and I ate your food, I will stay and fight for you.
I thought that he knew he was going to be okay, for one. If I would be really nonplussed if he was just going to go right out there and die. But after him having the security of having knowing what kind of person Lady Weber is and also having the ring in the boot, mm-hmm. I'm less like mystically surprised or impressed. That's kind of why all this is so good, because
right.
he's measured, but yet still, it's still something that a guy like Bennis wouldn't do.
So
there's that. But yeah, it's still grounded in reality. It's not a completely like a falsely mystical thing. Like it all still makes sense. And that checks out with all the other conversations we've had with how the universe operates as deep as the magic, for example. So that's good.
It's also really annoying.
Why is it annoying?
It's also really annoying because Fair Isle sounds so exciting. Like, let's go on a new adventure, you know?
Yes.
The vibe would have been so high for them to just drop them, you know? Just turn around. They're literally preparing for battle, and Dunk is just like, peace out.
I just don't like what you guys are doing.
That
See
was,
you later.
That's my kind of energy, so I was really looking forward. I was really looking forward to that. But
Bennis is dying, talking shit about Dunk.
Uh-huh,
the
yeah.
Lunk.
But yeah, how,
somehow
like,
it's Dunk's fault when
it
Bennis
always
dies.
Is. Yeah. It always is. But for some reason, Dunk staying, oh, for obvious reasons, Dunk staying really bolsters Eustace up. He gets really excited and it really changes the vibe. And Dunk convinces him, let's go out there together. Let's go face her. Better to die a lion than a rabbit. Like, let's go. Bennis's plan is the worst plan ever. We're not going to hole up here. We're going to go meet her out at the woods. Let's go.
Sir, Egg stood beside him. Sir, if we mean to go, we'd best be gone in case the widow comes. The boy was right. If we linger, we'll be trapped here. Yet Dunk still hesitated. Let them go, Bennis. What? Lose our valiant lads? Bennis looked at the peasants and brayed laughter. Don't you lot be getting any notions, he warned them. I'll gut any man who tries to run. Try, and I'll gut you. Dunk drew his sword. Go home, all of you, he told the small folk. Go back to your villages and see if the fire spared your homes and crops. No one moved. The brown knight stared at him, his mouth working. Sorry, leaf shout out. Dunk ignored him. Go, he told the small folk once again. It was as if some god had put the word in his mouth. Not the warrior. Is there a god for fools? Go, he said again, roaring. Roaring at this time. Take your spears and shields, but go, or you won't live to see the morrow. Do you want to kiss your wives again? Do you want to hold your children? Go home. Have you all gone deaf? They hadn't. A mad scramble ensued amongst the chickens. Big Rob trotted on a hen as he made his dash, and Pate came within half a foot of disemboweling Will Bean when his own spear tripped him up, but off they went, running. The melons went one way, the beans another, the barleycorns a third. Sir Eustace was shouting down at them from above, but no one paid him any mind, so just a big two sides of a mustache on top of a tower shaking his fist and yelling at him. They are deaf to him, at least, Dunk thought. By the time the old knight emerged from his tower and came scrambling down the steps, only Dunk and Egg and Bennis remained amongst the chickens. Come back, Sir Eustace shouted his fast-fleeting host. You do not have my leave to go. You do not have my leave.
Bennis is really just holding on to, not Bennis, Eustace is just holding on to every thread that he can hold on to make himself feel safe.
I bet at this point, at the end of his life, riding out with what he saw as an up-and-coming true knight, having conversations about possible assassination, and riding through his own worn-down, half off version of the Field of Fire was mm-hmm. pretty mystical
okay.
to happen in his life.
That was so funny. He was like, this is our Field of Fire. I was like, okay, the most important battle of Egg and the Conqueror's conquest.
Yeah.
This is your Field of Fire. He's like, man, this is must have been what it was like.
My checky water.
I love that for him. Good for Eustace, honestly. I mean, he is who he is, but he's got a lot of idealistic views about him and his land.
Remember the little lion?
Uh-huh.
What a dank thing for him to tell Dunk to go do.
Well, and
like,
yeah.
How much gold do you have to pay him to
exactly.
do that?
Exactly. And then the three of them, just the visual I had in my head of the three of them riding towards the stream, I just am envisioning the most epic of, like, late 90s, early 2000s fantasy vibes where there's rock music playing or some sort of thing.
That changes it completely in my head. I was imagining Ramin putting the strings to work.
Oh, no.
But that's even better.
That's what I was
picturing. We get Eddie Van Halen. He's uh-huh. the lead soloist on it.
Uh-huh.
But there's like 15 backing guitars.
There's smoke. Like the way that the armor was described of, let me see if I can find it because it was just so
talking
good.
About like the standard. When the Weber, when Lady Weber came through?
No, the
that's what stuck out to me.
Eustace's armor. There was some way that it was described to make it seem a little bit like it hasn't really been used in a while,
okay.
you know? And so anyway,
pajama all of this, pants just a little too short.
Exactly. All of this converging on with that kind of vibe in my brain. There's smoke everywhere. Dunk is leading the charge.
Where Wattswood had stood, they found a smoking wasteland. The fire had largely burned itself out by the time they reached the wood, but here and there a few patches were still burning, fiery islands in a sea of ash and cinders. Elsewhere, the trunks of burned trees thrust like blackened spears into the sky. Other trees had fallen and lay athwart the west way with limbs charred and broken, dull red fire smoldering inside their hollow hearts. There were hot spots on the forest floor as well, and places where the smoke hung in the air like hot gray haze. Sir Eustace was stricken with a fit of coughing, and for a few moments, Dunk feared the man, don't laugh at Eustace,
sorry,
would need to turn back. But finally, it passed.
It's powerful. Even Eustace coughing is powerful. Like, it just, it fits so well into this incredible mental image I have in my brain of them converging here at the water's edge.
I wonder how they're going to punch that up on TV, or if they'll keep it like that.
It's his field of fire, you know?
You need to be in the writer's room for that.
Yeah.
You write field of fire and dry erase board, underline it like 6 times with a red expo marker.
Aegon's conquest. Like, yeah. Look it up.
It's his field of fire.
You know? So the tension builds and the tension mounts.
Speaking of tension, let me describe Lady Rohan's appearance.
Oh my gosh.
Only then did Lady Rohan herself appear, astride a coal black mare decked out in strands of silvery silk, like unto a spider's web. The widow's cloak was made of the same stuff. It billowed from her shoulders and her wrists as light as air. She was armored, too, in a suit of green enamel scale, chased with gold and silver. It fit her figure like a glove and made her look as if she were garbed in summer leaves. Her long red braid hung down behind her, bouncing as she rode. Septon Sefton rode red-faced at her side, atop a big gray gelding. On her other side, I mean, that's a time to get another drink in. You're about to go take the ride.
Yeah, yeah.
On her other side was her young maester, Carrick, mounted on a mule.
She got dressed up for this.
Yeah.
As she should, as she talked to Dunk a little bit later. She needs to take every advantage she can take because she's a woman, you know?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say something funny. Oh. That was actually kind of sobering.
I mean, it's serious. Yeah, it's a serious thing. And
yeah.
I loved their conversation that they had between them because it was, they've met once before. They've been real to each other, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely flirting. Definitely, I mean, not even definitely, like 100%. Because she's like, I would marry you. If you were not who you are, if you were somebody completely different, I would marry you.
Yeah.
Love how straight up and honest it is, because I feel like a lot of the time we get the high level of deals being made, especially
like
when
double talk.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Especially like reading Fire and Blood. I guess that's just like what I'm coming off of as like the last text that we read. You get a lot of these like deals and these treaties and these big moves at a very high level without having a lot of real talk.
Just as the nature of it, for one.
Yeah.
But on top of that, it's all royal stuff.
Exactly. And so I'm sure there's lots of opportunities in A Song of Ice and Fire that I'm forgetting where we get conversations like these. But I just love the one-on-one.
Like the Hound and Arya.
Yeah. Like, let's actually try to strike a deal. There's no posturing here. There's no flexing here.
Tyrion and Jon.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great example. Let's actually just talk one-to-one. Well, hopefully Tyrion, Daenerys.
Yeah,
Tyrion, Jon, Daenerys.
All looking forward to.
To be able to have this kind of conversation.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time to get there for the three of them.
Do you remember when the show was coming out and everyone saw the teaser of Tyrion being a Marine? And everyone is talking about like the spectacle. Normally, what I'm trying to say is, for a show at this scale, people would be like, oh my God, dragons, blah, blah, blah. But so much of what I saw from all the show watchers on the internet was Tyrion and Daenerys are going to have a conversation.
Yes.
For that to be the biggest show on television, and for that to be the thing that people are looking forward to, just these two characters. Now, they're not even like time traveling or anything. Mm-hmm. They're not like, one's a famous artist from the past and you love his work. It's not you're secretly their father or she's secretly your brother, which could happen.
Could happen.
It wasn't that. It's just they've been alive at the same time. It's that big of a deal if they talk to each other. So I think what you're saying is that.
Yes.
But we get it very straightforward. And that's why I think Dunk was so confident to go right out and talk to them.
Because she knew that's how it was going to be.
And he knew that that's how they connected too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even Tansel, with all the goodness surrounding that scenario, they didn't have that straightforward of a connection.
No.
Maybe it's because maybe Tansel was smart enough, but she didn't have the same agency to be fully herself like someone who runs a castle and has all these people.
That was lust. This is love, you know?
I mean,
also no pressure to George on the meeting of Dany and Tyrion,
yeah, no,
but like
that's it.
That is it. Yeah. That is in
also,
my mind.
Dany and John, though. Finish your point, but also Dany and John.
I mean, to be honest, maybe the show kind of turned me off. I'm much less interested in Dany and John meeting. The show really soured, at least. No, like, okay, everybody's whatever. John and Dany in the TV show turned me off from the two of them almost.
That was an accident.
100%. 100%. I will be fine. There's just no. I didn't like it. I hated it. I thought it was bad. I just feel like it soured the whole excitement that I had
what
for these
it?
Two. It was so awkward, you know?
So the way it was written, not the concept itself? I'm trying to figure it out.
No, the way it was written and the way it played out was, I felt like so awkward, so forced, so weird. I can't be the only one, but I just felt like the way that their relationship played out in the TV series just turned me off from how excited I am for them to meet. I feel like between Tyrion and Daenerys, there was still enough like tension there, and not even like romantic tension. There was just like character tension between the two of them, like playing off of each other in the TV series, for me to continue to be so excited about the buildup of them meeting. And just because that's such a pinnacle moment, at least for me. Why are we even talking about this? I feel like John
Dunk and Brian.
Yeah, I feel like John and Dany, it did nothing for me in the TV series, unfortunately. And so I hope it's really good, you know, because those are actually two of the most storied figures in A Song of Ice and Fire meeting together and like coming together. Them falling in love with each other, like, okay, you know, whatever that ends up being is what it's going to be. But anyway, having all of those really epic, exciting, built-up moments, I hope that they're as straightforward and they're as honest as this scene was here, because I really liked the way it read. I really liked how they were making business deals, and I just feel like it came across really well, and maybe we can have that.
That's so true. The fact that all those people rode there, and they're in the shadow of a massive fire during a drought, really paints the context of this being a super serious thing. And we know how Rohan is because we've had a prior conversation with her. But her command of the situation was like one of the coolest people you've ever met in the midst of even something serious. That would be the most comfortable person to follow if they can be as comfortable. Oh, you want me to talk to you? And she initiates it and just rides out into the water to the belly of her mare. She's like, okay, come and talk to me. And then Dunk, on the other hand, doing the same thing without question. I mean, he did the same thing like five times in this section just to get to that point, sending the guys off, sending Bennis away with no question, telling Sir Eustace to come with him, not ruining the relationship with Sir Eustace so much so this would still all hold together. He's already been that, and that's why he's being regarded in the way that we describe. But to see both of them do that at the same time in such a heightened situation, not before each other get there, but while each other are there, is that super serious, top-level business talk, like you said. And it just so happens there's a little bit of sexual tension there.
Right. So it's really cool to see characters respect each other like that, mm-hmm. and be into each other like that in whatever way that is of, let's play, you know, like, let's, yeah. What do you got for me?
Yeah.
It was really well written. So, yeah.
What do you think about when she immediately she put her fingers on his lips?
Oh my gosh.
Right when they met.
The literal exact moment, because it's happening and you're like, we kind of know what's going to happen here. I think I know what's going to happen here.
Baller move.
Yeah. That's really powerful, but he doesn't flinch.
Jesus.
He doesn't flinch. He's like, okay, so let's go. Like, what? Now what? Dunk flirting with the enemy.
What did she offer you? I can't believe Eustace didn't name anything else. Poor guy.
So are we supposed to believe that she didn't set the fire? Like, do you think she's being... You might know the answer to this already, but is she being straight up here? Because she seems pretty adamant. She's like, my field would burn in 5 seconds if the winds turned, so I didn't light the fire. Are we supposed to believe her?
If only we had Maester Gildane to decode the scenario. I think that it's meant to be, especially at this point, meant to feel ambiguous for a reason. The way that she even teases out about how there could be a man and my service that I should be really grateful for, and why would I turn him in, mm-hmm. could also just be something you say to add a little bit more friction to a fun conversation. It doesn't have to necessarily be an admission of guilt. What do you think?
I don't know. I was kept going back and forth because I felt like it is true. Like, she doesn't. The only people who have anything to gain is Sir Eustace. She already has everything, pretty much. So she doesn't. She's not operating from a desperate standpoint.
She might be if people get wind of her allowing one of her men to be bullied and cut by Bennis.
There could be, but.
But why would she start more if that was the situation? Like, does she want their forest?
Especially when she could just come and take. As she threatens in this convo, she's like, we can just come and take him.
Yeah.
You know.
It was probably just a random fire.
It probably was because we.
Because it's a drought.
Well, it's a drought. And
the Kingswood's burning.
We've spent so much time talking about how dry it is and how hot it is and how there's nothing. So I feel like there's a high possibility that it's probably just an untimely accident.
So all the little ants on the Earth's surface trying to figure out how they deal with each other, living on the Earth with each other at the same time while nature plays a catalytic role. Yeah.
Wow, I could go on for hours about natural causes that have created major movements in history. But yeah, it's like an unfortunate catalyst for this.
For the truth to spill out.
It's a, what's the word?
A shove in the right direction.
A spark.
Yeah.
You know? And it's literally a spark into the flame. So I thought that was an interesting backdrop for the story, but it's probably just an accident. She seems pretty adamant. I don't think she has any reason to lie to somebody like Dunk.
But it's fun to tease him about it.
So fun. And it adds a lot of extra tension to the convo.
He takes the dagger. She's scared. I think I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but that's okay.
It's okay.
Slashes his beautiful face, which we can, he's never been described as beautiful, but we can imagine him. He's gorgeous, right? Slashes his face, and she says, if you were higher born, I would marry you. After he cuts his face. So a fellow's listening. I'm just saying.
That's one way to do it.
It's probably the only way to do it. Just a little bit more like directly depicted by an artist. Like that same concept. It's pretty much that same concept repeated in infinitum in different scenarios.
He's taking responsibility for the actions of his team. That's what you're talking about with Bennis. How much, like, okay, he's taking responsibility for Bennis. For, like, this guy that he doesn't even like. And he's like, I'll do it in this moment, you know?
How about that image of Bennis scurrying up into the tower?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's, like, got his legs hanging.
I
mean, I don't know if it happened that way, but he's got his legs hanging. And he leans up and skitters his feet across. His little shoes slide across the floor. And he helps really quickly pull up the staircase.
Yeah, I'll stay behind.
To lock himself in there.
Jeez.
Scurrying and hanging out in his little rat hole.
They do him no favors.
He did himself no favors.
He did himself no favors.
I mean, to go hide?
I know. Well, he.
Why not just leave? But to literally just go hide inside the tower?
Yeah, I know.
I'm not going to leave and I'm not going to be a part of this. So I'm going to go hide. It's like, you're not the guy that you think that you are.
I'm going to keep my little toes curled up in my boots.
Literally curled them as he picked up his feet and swung them across the threshold and got inside that hole.
Meanwhile, Bennis is out here. Not Bennis. Why do I keep doing that? Meanwhile, Dunk is out here drawing blood and flirting with the enemy.
The hottest girl in town.
Flirting with the hottest girl in town. Time and time again, she's like, we're going to cross this river or stream and we're going to be on your territory. Let's fight. And she's like how are you going to stop me?
I think you should sit in my lap and I'll spank you a few times.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
How do you propose stopping us crossing? Well, said Dunk, I'll tell you. But only you. Like, I got a little secret for you, girl. It's like, okay, let's go. But like I said, give her Bennis. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But why move on from that when we can go back and forth flirting with each other for 3 pages about who's more powerful than the other?
You wanted blood for blood. He laid the dagger against his cheek. They told you wrong. It wasn't Bennis, cut that digger. It was me. He pressed the edge of steel onto his face, slashed downward. When he shook the blood off the blade, some spattered on her face. More freckles, he thought. There, the Red Widow has her due. A cheek for a cheek. You are quite mad. The smoke had filled her eyes with tears. If you were better born, I'd marry you.
Yeah, so it worked really well for him, that moment there.
Now we also know what the boot is. So,
right.
What do you think?
What a perfect time, I think, for us to get the answers to this kind of, not even, the way it's talked about is like kind of mystical.
It was.
The whole time.
It makes you feel that way.
But it was mystical. because
you're so right. There's men on the little crossbows are pulled back,
and she goes, "I don't want to cause problems." She's a small fish, or she's a big fish in a little pond, and she's got it. Somebody's got to answer to the boss at the end of the day, you know. She's not the one. Somebody's got to. There's
a chain.
People above her, and so Dunk is able to knowingly or unknowingly, but knowingly, kind of flash his little card, basically, and say, "Back off! Like, you don't want to kill me. You don't want to kill any of these guys. Because all of a sudden, this goes from being a small issue between two."
Just a pissing contest.
Right. A border dispute, too. We're getting the king involved here. And
the king cuts off people's heads and puts them on spikes.
For less. And so it stops her dead in her tracks. And I thought that was such a great trump card. And to pull it out at this moment was really powerful. And like I said, it was mystical.
That is a really good point, because not only was the setting magical and the relationship between the two people talking quite magical, but to make it all stop from where it could have gone, it requires some kind of spellcraft, mm-hmm. you know, or there to be an even bigger, like a comet would have had to broken through the atmosphere and crashed there, mm-hmm. or a pack of like 30 wolves would have had to come and interrupt their little meeting, and then they still would have met later.
But that's what that was, because
that's what that was.
Yeah, nothing is,
and it fits inside of a boot.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. It was really. I just thought the timing of that was great. I was thinking that we would learn it, you know, on accident, like it falls out or something. Or, you know what I mean? Like some sort of.
So you thought
it
was a thing always.
I didn't think it was necessarily a thing. I thought that it was some sort of symbol. Some sort of symbol. This is going to sound so stupid. Can I say it anyway? I'm scared. You're going to make fun of me. All the things I thought it could potentially be. Well, I wondered, like, at the very beginning if it was almost some sort of, like, communication device.
Ooh.
Of, I was thinking port keys, you know?
Okay.
Like, here's a normal thing
uh-huh.
that we can disguise, but it's, like, a bigger thing.
She thought it was literally a Stoat's Head Hill boot.
Potentially.
Interesting.
Potentially, but.
Like, a la glass candle?
Yeah. But what it ended up being was just as important and used in the same exact way that would have been used. But it's just a thing. You know, there's no magic behind it necessarily other than the name.
That would have been really fun. Really fun. Here's why. In Asuaf, those things, maybe do they exist?
Maybe.
Marwyn maybe knows how to uh-huh. play with them independent of the other Archmaesters. So. It would be a really cool opportunity in this tertiary tale in the same universe if, since they're ancient technology in Asuaf current, what if, since the egg is such an important servant to Dunk, that they were given basically an iPhone
to ring home with, or something like that.
Yeah,
he's being sent out into the middle
something
of nowhere.
Similar, at least some kind of a beacon
exactly.
that transcends like a vision or something.
Let me call home if something really bad happens.
I think that's really smart. I think that's cool.
So that's what I thought. That'd
been fun to do.
Also, we're in, as you're saying, the time of ancient magic. So the vibrations are going to be higher here than they are in current day A Song of Ice and Fire. So current day Westeros. So. I thought that could potentially have been it for a little while. But like I was saying, I still think the same thing was accomplished. It doesn't need to be some sort of technology for it to shut people up, because the networking and the relationships and all that is so important.
It's its own technology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's its own currency. And so what a great time for that to come into play.
Especially in context of where she is. You said big fish, little pond, and she describes it. She says, this guy is trying to take me for my mill. This guy is trying to take me for this hill where cool things can grow on. I have to be this kind of person in order to remain a big fish in a little pond.
Right.
And that's just what the game is.
Right.
So that being the decoration around, by the way, you see this? This is the king's symbol, and I've got one of his people with me.
So maybe
you should cool off a little.
But let's help each other out. Yeah. Because then after that is when he cuts his cheek, right?
Yep.
So like I was saying, it's just a tit for tat, but in like a very powerful and direct way. There's some real negotiation going on here. And so I thought that was a great reveal for that. And Dunk says, I want to read it. Let's see. Tell me what you think is going to stop us, she says to him. Me. He pulled one gauntlet off. In Flea Bottom, I was always bigger and stronger than the other boys, so I used to beat them bloody and steal from them. The old man taught me not to do that. It was wrong, he said. And besides, sometimes little boys have great big brothers. Here, have a look at this. Dunk twisted the ring off his finger and held it out to her. She had to let loose of her braid to take it.
Ooh, important right there.
Gold, she said. And then she felt the weight of it. What is this, sir? She turned it over in her hand. A signet. Gold and onyx. Her green eyes narrowed as she studied the seal. Where did you find this shirt, sir? In a boot. Wrapped in rags and stuffed up the toe. You took a great risk in showing me this ring, sir. But how does it avail us? I should command my men to cross. ... Well, said Dunk, that would mean I'd have to fight. And die, most like, he said. And then Egg would go back where he comes from and tell what happened here. Not if he died as well. I don't think you'd kill a boy of 10, he said, hoping he was right. Not this boy of 10, you wouldn't. And then they go on. She's like, no. Like, I need Bennis, but I'm not going to do that. He holds out his hand. What about this? You know, it's like
Power Rangers.
Yeah, it is.
This is like a scene from The Sopranos,
mm-hmm.
but in a obviously a much different feudal universe. But the same like feudal tactics are in Sopranos, and I bring that up because it's HBO fodder.
Sure, yeah,
it's HBO fodder.
Yeah.
So seeing this scene depicted on the screen, and it's already so laid out and ready just to shoot the hell out of what they've already described here. We don't need to add another character to the scene. We don't need to take someone else. Like, Bennis doesn't need to go to the edge.
We don't need to rewrite the dialogue.
Of the river.
No.
You know what I mean? He can stay up
home.
In the tower. Mm-hmm. Like, this is good. Like,
it's
have
perfect.
Confidence in this because it's already where it needs to be.
It's perfect.
You just need good actors.
And good music in the background, you know?
Right. And we've already laid out the blueprint for that, too.
Yeah. It's a great scene. It also makes me think of, like, I was trying to think about what in my life would make me stop dead in my tracks that way, in that type of situation. I can think of almost nothing.
Like,
so.
Someone with your Venmo pulled up, and then, like, a send button, and there's, like, $1 billion.
So what? I don't even have $1 billion,
so they might,
you know,
send it to you.
It's not going to go through on Venmo. They're going to flag that charge immediately.
That's true.
No, but yeah, you know, like, what in your life would make you stop dead
That's
in
tough.
Your tracks?
Yeah.
And give up. And so just the social currency of the world that they live in. It's pretty cool to see that replayed. And so she's like, okay, fine, throw up her hand, but I can't go back empty handed. Like, what are you gonna do for me?
Cuts blood his face. Blood. The scar's gonna look even hotter later on his face. She's into it already before it's healed.
Tell Sir Eustace that I demand an apology or a trial. The choice is his.
That's fair. She's taking it a little too seriously.
Just give him
someone,
Bennis.
Someone cut their face on the road. I mean, guys, we're in Westeros.
Yeah, blood for blood. Like, it's over now.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, there's that too, yeah.
Blood for blood, it's over now. But like she said, she's like, I need a little something extra.
Mm-hmm.
So can you help me out? Oh my gosh, I have zero faith, zero trust, zero vibes. And Sir Eustace going to trial
yeah.
with them.
Yeah.
Send Bennis trial by combat.
With who? Lucas?
By himself. He's
to fight Lucas?
Yeah. You know?
Ooh, that would actually be a fun fight to
yeah,
watch.
Yeah. Send Bennis
really
by himself.
Really fun fight to watch.
Everybody wins. It hurts nobody, benefits everybody. You
In
know?
The same way that this scenario playing out from the beginning of the Sworn Sword till now is poetic with the sort of end stages of Eustace's career as being a guy who has a castle, who tells people what to do. This is poetic for Rohan in that it's a young, huge, sprightly lad that everyone knows, because everyone that lives at Cold Moat knows each other really well. The way that they were described as being a sort of like body band of friends in the midst of running a real castle with real lands and real small folk. They see her out there treating with Dunk after they already know how the situation went with Dunk at Cold Moat. And so she's going to be taking this vibe back home too.
Right.
So she's going to be hurting from this. No matter what, everyone's going to be hurting from this. These two renegades that entered the realm of all of them and shook things up so mm-hmm. much just because they protected each other's vibe. How much they're able to how much chaos they were able to create and how much truth they were able to inject in everyone's lives just from not being bullshit is very interesting.
It is. It's a rare, it's a very rare thing. So, like we were talking about before, just adapt it directly, line by line. This
Let's
is
go.
Such good stuff here. And so I cannot wait. Next up, we get a trial, whatever that means. I'm gunning for a trial by combat with Bennis. The end of the sword.
Bennis fights the guy with the goiter on his neck.
Yeah. The sworn sword, the end is just Bennis, like, either running away.
He chokes
away,
on his own sour leaf and dies.
Either he chokes on his own sour leaf and dies. That's pretty funny. Oh, my gosh. What a hilarious.
He swallows too much.
What an incredible and hilarious, like, undertone to his character is this really weird habit that he has. And it turns his
teeth
red.
And the more intense it is, the more he's chewing and the more furious he's chewing.
He needs a Zine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just just back it up a little bit, boys. Yeah. Like, you can get everything you need easily.
It doesn't need to be that obvious.
Nah.
He's going to get hit in the mouth in this battle that's going to happen. Whatever. We're going to be like, wow, is that his sour leaf or is that blood? Like, we don't know, you know,
like that.
Because of his little habit that he's got going on over
it's
here.
It's a little laugh for the audience.
Uh-huh. So, of course, Dunk would stay. Of course, Dunk is going to fix the situation. Of course, Dunk is going to be in with the girlies for no reason other than because...
That's all he's interested in.
That's all he's interested in. Yeah. And that's just where his vibe is.
He's not with the banker boys in their tents. They're like, how much are you betting on this guy? He's like, where's the girl doing the puppet show?
Yeah, exactly. He stayed true to himself and true to his word. Can't wait to see where that takes him. But...
No Blood Raven. There was no Blood Raven in this.
There was no Blood Raven in this.
Yeah. But, I'm not saying anything.
Okay.
I'm not saying anything.
I wasn't thinking about Blood Raven at all. But I guess we talked lore anyway for Song of Ice and Fire because we were talking about what this setting could mean for Jon and Daenerys coming together. So we didn't completely miss out on how this could impact the story today. But there was no Blood Raven. Okay, so I'll keep an eye out for that next time.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, you're not saying anything other than completely calling it out.
It's time to move on to owns. And boy, do we probably have a couple owns. I know that I made two, which is short for me.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go
first? Number one, Egg was listening too. He coughed and looked at Dunk with wide, wide eyes. Sir, you have to stop them. How? Dunk asked. The Red Widow will stop them. Her and that Lucas Longinch. They're only making noise, Egg. Oh, sorry, that's not Egg. They're only making noise, Egg. It's that or piss their breeches, and it's not to do with us now.
That's cutting.
And own number two. Sir Eustace rounded on Dunk, his mustache quivering with rage. You had no right to send them away, no right. I told them not to go. I forbade it. I forbade you to dismiss them. We never heard you, my lord. Egg took off his hat to fan away the smoke. The chickens were cackling too loud.
That was my own, too.
Genius.
That was my
genius.
Own, too.
Genius.
Egg doesn't say much.
21st century genius. Let's go.
Yeah, that was my own, too. He doesn't say much, but when he does, it is always, it's the nail on the head.
We never heard you. Instantly diffused. Gone.
Immediately after that, he sinks down into Standfast's lowest step. What did that woman offer you to deliver me to her? How much gold did she give you to betray me? Dunk's like, betray you? Like, you've been betraying me.
Was that your own?
My own was the egg quote. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
My own was the egg.
I thought you were just ripping on Eustace so hard. You're like, that. He sounded like such a punk right there.
He did. But we needed to read the next line to
got it.
To give that to that. So own to that for me. Own to Dunk, just hashtag protect girls. Like, he's just out here doing what he does best. And he's so good at it that it actually is making some useful impact in the world around him. So shout out there.
Also got to say, was that your last one? This is some of the most perfect training that Ed could have for a potential leader one day.
Oh, yeah.
Watching these squabbles, watching how these big fish and little ponds within the kingdom actually behave. Mm-hmm. Seeing the landed knights that are working for them, how they actually behave, keeping that all in context, having this million thousand foot view over the scenario of running a kingdom and actually having a little bit of time dancing within them, not just doing what Jaehaerys and Alysanne did, not even just doing what Aegon did, the Aegon won. But actually going out there and being within what the current thing is, like knowing the job on a real level and not just knowing aspects that got you the job or being born into the job. What great training for Egg. So obviously these things were put into consideration before the author decided to make this one of the few tertiary stories on the main story. But for that to be so, like, deep down into the heart of why this exists in the first place is just levels of smart that I have no, like, business getting close to, you know?
It's so interesting to me that that isn't a required thing for everybody or for every future leader, you know? Yeah. Kind of like a, what's it called when you go and live somewhere else?
Like an exchange student?
No, yeah. Not when you're a hostage, but when you are a, like, you live under someone else's, in their castle.
So I was right. Oh, you mean in this universe?
Yeah, in this universe. Like, you live in their castle, and you study under them, and you learn more about them.
Steward. No. It's a ward.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, like a ward. Yeah, that's it.
He's being a ward of Westeros.
Yeah, how...
Itself.
Nothing is going to better prepare you to have these legit conversations and to be a leader than to be out in the streets, like, and to understand what these normies actually really care about.
Not just your sigil. To visit it.
Really matters. But you think about, again, somebody like Jon or Daenerys, who have had that opportunity to kind of be out. Like, Daenerys had that opportunity to time and time again, like, make mistakes and lead, which is, you know, we could argue about the necessity of that all day long. But in order to be the guy, you can't be the guy by just reading a book. You can't be the guy by shutting yourself up in the library and not getting some real world experience outside of that ivory tower. And so where this could potentially take Egg, or the information that he could gather, that is invaluable. He's young too, and so he's very impressionable. And so to be out in the world and to be soaking it all in under somebody like Dunk, who is so idealistic and who's so for the people and who is so headstrong Gryffindor energy, that he's not learning from somebody like Bennis. Like, he's getting thrown in headfirst, like, let's save everybody we can and be super idealistic. So, yeah, I'm just completely agreeing with you. And I know we spent some time talking about it on the last episode, but it's just really cool to zoom out. Are we going to see any of that kind of resolution at some point? You know I don't, but what an incredible lesson. And why wouldn't it seems so obvious. Like, why wouldn't everybody do that?
Yeah. Or at least everyone that's getting put into a certain role be vetted to that degree to be able to answer for some kind of context.
Right.
You know, instead of just the technical aspects of it or the familial aspects of it, the nepotism.
Exactly.
Just actually being able to answer to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm sending my kids to boarding school. No.
Figure it out. There's going to be creeps there.
Yeah, I'm not going to be there.
Learn about creeps.
Anyway, so those are our owns. Now it's time for yours.
Going to look at Twitter right now. Formerly known as Twitter. X. Football school at Josh Desarn says, if the Sworn Sword isn't your favorite Dunkin' Egg story, you are doing it wrong. Hashtag own.
Over on Instagram, we've got Ken Got the Juice, who rightfully called me out for putting the wrong. I said it was part 7.
Oh, yeah. He was the one who said, like, wait, what happened to part 6?
Thank you. Somebody cares. Own to Dunk for razzing the lady of the castle at all of 1819.
I don't think he said rizzing when he followed
up.
Yeah,
rizzing. Yeah. Sorry.
So for those of you playing home, that means doing the work correctly to make her want to marry him. At Ghost Chase Killa on Twitter, own to Dunk for paying the blood price himself. He better have Septon Sefton look at that, or it's going to scar. So true.
Nah, he's got to keep the scar.
Keep the scar, dude.
Keep the scar.
Yeah, keep it. Also on Twitter, at Straight Savage Cole, my own goes to Dunk's masochistic dream of Lady Rowanhan and her nipples that resembled berries. Maybe he was also hungry, as Sir Eustace didn't seem to feed him very well. It's a good thought. I also found it interesting that Dunk was dreaming of Watts Wood, and then he awakened it to it being ablaze. Yeah. Also, the arrows. The illustration in the book being filled with arrows.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that could have potentially happened.
Mm-hmm.
If certain mindsets weren't engaged earlier in the chapter, if he would have ridden to that riverside next to the Checky water with a different vibe in his mind, maybe it would have ended
like a premonition,
turning into a porcupine.
Yeah, okay. And then next from Travis, second own to when Dunk did the valiant thing by telling all the fools who were going to die for Sir Eustace, which made his mustache quiver yet again. Egg's one-liner. We never heard you because the chickens were cackling too loud, my lord. That was top-notch comedy. Lastly, I would like to give a pretty golden dragon or two to hear the filth that was spewing from Benny's mouth when Wattswood was on fire. At least it wasn't sour leaf
so
for a
true.
Change.
Like when he discovered that it was happening?
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are our owns for
part six. For part six.
You can send yours in a number of ways.
You can find us on Instagram, on Twitter /X by searching for Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This was fun. Another year gone.
I know. 2024, the year of the dragon. It is the year of the dragon, though.
It's the
though.
Year. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Did you check that for real?
Yes.
All well, right.
Let me double check
Hold
it
on.
Again.
I need a better cheers then. Hold on. No, let's go off that information. I liked what you just said.
Yeah, it literally is the year of the dragon.
All right,
so,
then. Okay,
let's
2024,
cheers.
The year of the dragon. We'll be back in early 2024. Have a good holiday,
with
everyone.
With the last sworn sword chapter? Oh, I'm not making any promises. Okay, see ya, everybody.